rebellion in the wind.
A new world order. A new world order.
How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in.
Put out an all-points bulletin. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order. A new world order.
Attention. Attention.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens, what kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for...
That's Jones.
Radio program.
And now for something completely different.
And yes, we are live. It is the last day of, last day of February 2011. It's the 28th. For some reason, I thought this was a leap year, but I guess it's not. And Lou's here, Ruger's here, but Stacy is still ill. You can hear it in my voice, but she's down and out. Everybody seems to have gotten it for 7 to 10 days, so she's hopefully listening on the computer down in the house downstairs. But this is the Dutch Jones radio program. We are live right now on a beautiful Monday. The storm is gone, and it's like 60 degrees, pretty much clear blue skies, no chemtrails to speak of. And we are bringing you from Cahuilla, California. You're going to lose that mic. Push it back in farther. From Cahuilla, California, the Christian militant separatist worldview. We're Christian separatists, not white separatists. I got to get that through your stinking heads. It's amazing to me. I just bumped the microphone. Sorry about that. I'm wearing a hat. I don't normally wear a hat when I'm on the air, but I have it on because I was just out on the shooting range. We are not racial separatists. We embrace all creeds and colors as long as they conduct themselves like a normal human being. In fact, I don't think we throw people out of the church that are white, too, just for being idiots. It happens. We don't think just because the color of your skin you automatically got a pass or a gimme or that you're going to be a problem. So enough with the Christian identity folks sending me emails and posting on the Facebook page. We do have a presence on Facebook, both for the Church of Cahuilla and for the Dutch Jones radio program. You just go to Facebook and look for Dutch Jones radio program or Dutch Jones. You'll find it. And make sure you spell Jones, J-O-E-N-S. A lot of stuff's happening. We weren't on Friday. I was feeling dead. Plus, the internet, as soon as we get a storm in here of the magnitude we've been getting, it shuts down the satellite. I sent off an email today to some representative. Who was it?
Mendoza.
Yeah, no, I was his office assistant, but who was the representative, the legal representative that I sent it to? I can't remember which one. Devin Nunez. He's an elected official for this district, and I said, hey, maybe you could tell AT&T to get their act together and get some internet up here. Who knows? We'll see what happens. I think they're Republicans. I don't know. They're all stooges to me, but if we can use them to get something done to make the show better and to be able to reach you more often than not, then we'll do that. I received a very unusual email over the weekend from, if you guys watch, I think it's Discovery Channel and History Channel has these shows on Ice Road Truckers, World's Most Dangerous Roads, Axemen, I could go on and on and on. The list goes on. This company that produces all of those videos, and I watch them all, and I pretty much like everything I send. What's the guy's name? Mike Rowe, America's Worst Jobs or whatever, that guy. Well, I got an email from them, and they wanted to talk to us about what we're doing here on the radio. Now, if you guys remember, a little over a year ago, the History Channel wanted to talk about militias, and I turned them down. And now I've got the Discovery Channel, I think it's Discovery Channel, where they do all these things, and they want to talk about militia, or not militia, but internet radio and political internet radio. And at first I turned them down in an email, then I thought about it, and I said, I'll tell you what, you guys pitch me what the show's going to be about, and we'll see. I don't know. I probably won't do it. I know everybody's telling me not to do it, but I was thinking that if they want to do it, I'll say, okay, give me $30,000.
Right now,
give me $30,000 up front. And then when they come to, you know, videotape me, I'll dress up as a clown and just act insane so they can't use the footage. And if they do use it, it won't look like me, so it won't matter. But I find it funny that, now where am I here? I got to close this one. I got to get back to our peeps to see who's listening. I think it would be funny, Truckers for Jews, I mean Diamonds. I don't know, it's just funny, they've got those shows, and it's like every once in a while I knew the one about the militia was coming, because other militias have been contacted. I think they gave them my name, and that was over a year ago, and they contacted the Corn Key folks, and they said no, and they went to that, the guys who turned in the Hutari, they ended up being on it. Some people I know in Southern California ended up being on it. I never saw the final product. I don't have cable up here, so I don't know how it came out, but it just doesn't seem good. But I find it hilarious that this little old me in this little old corner of the internet and the belly button of California and the Commonwealth of Kauai got the attention of them. They actually said they listened to the show. So either that or one of you guys told them about it. I don't know. But I find it weird. We've only got a few people listening right now. I guess because it's a Monday and I wasn't here Friday. I did post, let me make sure I posted that on Dutch. Yeah, I posted that we were on and that people can come and listen. But that's okay. As long as there's a handful of you there, you know what? I'll do the show for you. I see Scotty38's in there. Scotty, daughter came home on Thursday. She's getting better. Okay, that's great. We were curious about that. I knew Thursday you said that if she did good, she was going to come home, and then at least I didn't get to talk to you on Friday. Stacy may have been on, but I wasn't. I didn't even want to get near the microphone. But that's great, Scotty. I'm glad to hear that our prayers went out and that she's home and doing fine. So we've got that. I'm trying to think. There's not much else going on. Don't forget, Tuesdays we'll have Steve Klein on again, and hopefully this Thursday we'll be able to get the pastor on. He got it the worst out of anybody up here, this bug, wherever it originated from. And we're going to try and have Practical Christianity up. I think we skipped two Thursdays so far, haven't we? Did we have to do sermons two Thursdays in a row?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I think we did, because last Thursday, I think. Or was that the only Thursday?
I think that was the only
Thursday. And then the Thursday before that, he was judging a contest. So that's right. So we've missed two Thursdays in a row of Practical Christianity. So we did play some sermons and stuff, and people seemed to like those. And again, you can check out the Church at Kauai's website by going through our website. Are you going to let the dog play with those? No, don't. That's too cute. Yeah. I'll let him tear that up. But we're going to try and get back on track here. We'll have Steve Klein report in on some of the things he's doing. We're going to continue with the Code 20 trainings. I finished the rifle rack and some barricades to shoot around. We got the shooting range all ready, and Camp Kauai is up and running. I think that's what we're going to continue to call it, Camp Kauai. It's easier than saying the Church at Kauai, because it's separate from the Church at Kauai. The Church at Kauai they're integrated, but they're separate. And I hope it's not too sophisticated that people can't understand that. The militia, we meet at the church, and yes, almost everybody that goes to the church is in the militia, but it's a separate entity. So Camp Kauai, we're coming along. We went out and we wanted to buy a water fountain for out there, because in the summer it's just unbearable out there on the range, because all the trees are gone. Even though we're surrounded by trees, we don't have any shade out there. And I went and got just a little spigot for the water fountain. It was like $50. Just the spigot, the little knob you turn, not even a tray, not a cooling element, just something you put on the end of a piece of pipe or PVC, was $50. Talking about inflation, everything's just getting more and more expensive. Ammo's getting more and more expensive. Saturday we hit the gun shops in Fresno, looking around, and there is a depletion, just a depletion of weapons available. Everything's being bought up. I went into the store of our choice. What's it called? Mayfield's? Mayfield's on First and Ash and Clovis. It's either Clovis or Fresno. I don't know where one ends and one begins. And I'm like, what's the matter? You guys going out of business? Said, no, we're just selling everything. I went looking for pistols, and they had nothing in stock. They had three or four revolvers, and the rest of the pistols they had were law enforcement only for California, which is a whole other story. So there was nothing there, but there's lots of ammo. Sergeant Slade is saying, and my eyesight's bad, so I got to lean back here to read it. He bought a 7-acre in the mountains of Tennessee, and wind generators. You know as much as I know about wind generators, I Googled it on, not Googled it, I went to YouTube and searched it. There's a ton of stuff. I had downloaded a series of videos on how to take a you know, an older alternator and rewire it to make a wind generator out of it. So I go to YouTube, and you can find a bunch of stuff there. I haven't, in fact, Lou's looking it up right now, and he'll post some stuff in there. But you can take older alternators out of cars. I don't know the year. I think it's like pre-76 or something. And don't quote me on that. I just, you know, glanced at it. And you can make wind generators. You can make water wheels out of them. And it's funny that you bring that up, because today I was just talking with somebody, because, as you know, we have a stream that goes underneath our house. It doesn't move fast enough to turn anything, but if you were to gear it and, you know, dam up some water and funnel it through a little hose, you might get enough pressure to maybe charge some, you know, rechargeable batteries for our communications units. It would be, it says URL removed, Lou.
I know, but there's something like that.
What did that? Oh, there we go.
There's lots of stuff on there.
Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff there. So, but yeah, wind and water is going to be the key. I mean, with the way oil's going and the way they plan to have it go, you know, we were in Fresno yesterday, like I said, not just the looking at gun stuff, but gasoline was $3.80 a gallon. I saw diesel at $4.01 for diesel. $4.01, which still confuses me, because diesel is one of the first levels of refining, if I remember from my college days. It's a simpler type of fuel, and it's costing more. And maybe it's supply and demand or something, or how much they make of it. But $4.01 a gallon for diesel here. And Fresno, California, other than Hawaii, if you count just the 48 contiguous states, Fresno has the highest gas prices in the country. Now, a lot of that has to do with our higher tax here in California and the formulas for just regular fuel. They have to have all kinds of stuff in it. I don't even understand all of it. But the fuels here in California are more expensive because of that. Well, when I went to the gun shop, I was looking at a certain pistol online that was $375 in the catalog. When I went there, I said, can you guys get me this pistol? And I go, yes, we can. We can order from that manufacturer. And I said, okay, well, I found it for $375 online. Can you match that? And they go, well, that's not a California legal pistol. I go, yeah, it is. It's on the list. They said, no. The specific model number is not a California legal pistol. So I said, okay, well, how much is the California legal version of this pistol? And they said, oh, it's $425. So that's what? $50 more. The base price was $50 more. I said, well, what's the difference between this pistol that I looked at online and the one that I can actually get the manufacturer, American manufacturer, to send here? He says, the one you looked at online will fire without the magazine in it. The one that has to come to California has an added machining to it and a lever put in it that it will not allow it to fire without the magazine in. It's ridiculous. I said, that's the only difference? They go, yes. It can't fire. You can put it around in the chamber, pull the trigger all day long, and the hammer will not drop. The sear will not release unless there's an empty or full or partially full magazine in there. Now, I'm a tinkerer, and first thing I'm going to do is take that gun apart and defeat that. And so all you law enforcement scumbags that are listening, you need to know about that. But it's ridiculous. The prices on what they did have, there was nothing in the .45 caliber under $800 that they could even get. The stuff they had were all higher-end $1,100, 1911s, things like that. In the law enforcement only, they only had like three or four pistols, and I didn't even bother to look at them. There was one off-duty police officer there looking at him. It's just ridiculous. And then in order to get a pistol in California, you have to take a written test now and pass it. I think it's a 25-question test. And I said, what good is that going to do? And then the guy behind they were cool there, but he was like, well, you know, at least it gets him aware of some safety things. And, you know, it had the four basic rules of firearm practice, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And then there's these stupid laws that you cannot allow a minor to have access to firearms. You're supposed to have a gun vault in California. So people who tell you that tyranny doesn't exist in America, that we still have freedom, have not visited California, don't know anyone in California that tries to own a firearm. Our other experience this weekend was Steve Klein had contacted us, and he was thinking about getting some high-powered air rifles for our Code 20 people that are in England and different European countries. And knowing that Lou's into it, he asked, you know, me to ask Lou, you know, what do you have like in 22 and 25 and 30 and even 50 caliber air rifles? And those of you that have listened to the show know that I talk about like the 50 cal rifle that Lewis and Clark had that was an air gun, and use a modified bicycle pump that costs $100 to get these things up, and they move pretty good, like 900 feet per second. Yeah, for a 50 cal slug, like What's the 50 cal slug, the 200 grain slug? What's that move at?
500-600 feet per second,
you know, and they're good out to 50 yards. So we're thinking, yeah, this would be great. Well, then Lucid, you got to look online. We looked online, and Lou gave us a link, and there's all these nations where there's, like, these bizarre limitations for air guns around the world. What was it for Hong Kong? It can't...
Airsoft?
Yeah.
If it's over 1 foot-pound of pressure, it's a firearm.
Yeah, if it goes over 1 foot-pound of pressure...
1.56.
Yeah, it's a firearm. And then Debbie's in the background. They're back from their honeymoon. And
hi.
She said, what about airsoft? Well, airsoft, you have to have a license, don't you?
In Israel, that's the only place.
Israel, you needed a license for it, but the rest of the place is really legal. Yeah. But you're not, I mean, there's no, that's just a training aid. But if you wanted an air gun, so I started looking at England, and we've got a couple people that listen in England, and correct me if I'm wrong, but what I found was you can't even have archery equipment in your home anymore. And if you have a coat of arms, it can't have real swords on it, removable swords. They have to be, you know, theater store, you know, stage swords. They can't be actually sharpened and, you know, and capable of piercing, you know, through people. And these guys have told me that they have to, if they have archery equipment in England, they have to belong to an archery club, and it has to stay at the archery club. Well, if you were listening to Liberty Tree Radio Friday's morning intelligence report, Mark Kornke was talking about what was going on down at Fort Bragg, where they questioned the soldiers, do you have a firearm? If they said yes, then the next question was, will you turn it in when you're told to do so? And if you said no, they sent you for psychological evaluation. This is a confirmed event. This isn't just something that somebody heard about, or they said that it's confirmed. He 100% confirmed it, that they're doing that. They're getting ready to disarm us either with ridiculous legislation, and I'm talking about we, the whole world, or through with by just pricing us out of it and making it impossible to get guns. If I'd have had $5,000, I couldn't have bought what I wanted this weekend anywhere in the area. There's just no guns, you know. And sure, everybody says, well, drive over to Vegas. Well, one, I don't have a car that'll make the trip. And two, why should I have to drive to a free state? Why do I, you know, it's this state should be free. And I heard a quote today. It said that no one knows tyranny better than he who stands up against it. You know, the rest of America that could care less about owning a firearm and willingly give up their protection to other people and want other people to sacrifice their lives, they don't know what it's like to have to try and buy a firearm. They don't know what it's like to try and buy ammo now. And they're going to make it harder and harder. They're not going to strike until they know that every possible person that they could disarm has been disarmed. They're going to keep squeezing the sponge and tweaking the towel until every firearm is squeezed out of our hands that they know they can get legislatively, intimidation-wise. And then they're going to come after those people like you and me that they know will not give up our guns. And they've got lists. They know those of us that are Christian-based. They know those of you that are just patriotic-based. They know the lone wolves. They know all that. They know who we are. You know, people are saying, don't do this radio show for, or don't do this TV show for Discovery because, you know, they'll find out who you are. Well, they already know who I are. I do this as much as I can on the radio. They know who we are. We're on lists of lists of lists, you know. And you can try changing your identity. You can do everything. They've got your genetic makeup. If you've ever been to a doctor, they got your genetic makeup. They got your fingerprints. If you've ever been background checked or gotten a job or gotten a DUI, they know who you are. What they're trying to do is get the fence sitters, the milquetoast people, to give up their guns. And that's what they're going after. You know, they're declaring air guns, firearms in other countries now. In this UN disarmament treaty, I guarantee you they know about air guns. And they know the lethality of them. And they're not going to let us have those either. Well, I mean, they're going to think they're not going to let us have those. The time's coming. The time in the sand, the line in the sand has been crossed long ago. It's just a matter of the bookkeeping and the follow-up. They're kind of in a, in Africa especially, I mean, they're in full-on frontal warfare now. Look what they're doing in Africa. And they're saying that they're sending in, you know, these little rescue missions. They're sending troops in. Just like what happened in the Georgia War a couple years ago. Not in United States, Georgia, over in former Soviet Georgia. They were finding out that there were American soldiers over there doing fighting against the Russian soldiers. Nothing's changed. And they may be saying they're going in to rescue Americans out of all these North African poop holes that countries that are falling apart. Truth is, we got troops on the ground there already, folks. We got CIA, private armies. They're all fighting over there, which is amazing to me because they won't go after the pirates in Somalia, but that's another subject we'll talk about in the second half hour. But yet, you know we've got people on the ground in North Africa. And we've got people on the ground in Iran. Just shaking the cage, just trying to get this whole thing off, get this thing going. I had reports this weekend that they know who it is. I know who it is. A militia in San Bernardino got the commander of a militia group in San Bernardino. I think it's one I used to know. Got a call from the FBI and said, we'd like to come speak to you at your house. Nothing scary going on. We just want to come talk to you. So he said, sure, come on over. So the FBI comes over, they sit down with them, they start talking to them, and they start asking them questions. I said, well, wait a minute, why are you asking me these questions about, these things? And it turns out that somebody in his group, or somebody who knows his group, supposedly, was sitting in a restaurant talking all big and loud about being in the American militia and about what they were going to do and what they're getting ready for in a restaurant. This may not even be true. The FBI could have just made it up. But it goes to operational security. If you've got people in restaurants bragging about being parts of the militia, or they got a buddy who's in the militia, it's too late for your group if that's what's happening. But I tend to believe that these guys got good operational security, and the FBI was just making it up. And they're shaking the tree. They wanted to see who he immediately called, and who that person called, and who sent out emails, and they just backtraced them. So, of course, they saw I got an email that says, warning alert, FBI coming over my house. So now but they knew who I was. I'm not going to be naive and think that I'm some, hidden person that nobody knows where I'm at. No way. But all the other people that were on that email chain, they now know who it is. So when they're going to start shaking the tree to see who's got guns and stuff, some of the things they may do, and I remember this happening back in the 90s when a church in Anaheim put out an alert. I can't remember if it was by phone or by email. And they said, hey, the IRS is coming to shut down our church. Get 3 days' supply of food and ammo and come to our church. And I was like, no, I ain't going there. It was in Anaheim. And, it was some church that got busted for not paying their employees with I-9s or something. And I'm like, I'm not going to answer that call because it wasn't from anybody I knew. And I was like, how'd you get my name? How'd you know I was a patriot? And for all I know, they were just putting out, an action order to see who responded. We got to start keeping alert, folks. And now is the time to acquire weapons. Now is the time to acquire our skills. We're going to step up our training here. That's one of the reasons why we're boosting up the firing range and all that kind of stuff. And your groups need to be doing it too. And if you're anywhere in the area, contact me. You've got my emails. You've got my contacts. Obviously, if you're listening to this, you're on our website. And you can send off an email to me, and we can help you with your training. If you can't make it here, we'll at least give you links to where you can get the doctrine that you can use or put you in touch with our trainers, the people that train us. Scotty threw in there, he picked up a Savage 253,000, I don't know what that is, for $200. The Savage is here. I just looked at a used Savage 308 heavy barrel with the AccuTrigger, oversized bolt handle, decent glass on it. They wanted $900 for it, a used one here in California. The only thing I can think is that the gun dealers are profiteering a little bit, or that the gun dealers are having a hard time getting the material to sell. So therefore, supply and demand, capitalism kicks in. I used to buy Savages for $425 new out of the box. That was before the AccuTrigger, so I don't know how much more those are. And then I'd spend another $150 putting a better trigger on them. The prices are getting weird, the supply and demand. So first they tried the ammo thing. Ammo was hard to get. Now we saw ammo everywhere we went. Went to Walmart, tons of ammo. But the rifles and the pistols are in short supply. Guns are not for selling right now. Do not sell any of your guns. I don't care how bad it gets. If you have to send your children off for scientific experiments to make the rent payment and buy food, that's what you do. You don't sell any guns right now. I don't care if it's a Mosin Nagant. you don't want to get rid of any kind of firearm that's functional right now. And if you've got broken firearms, break them down to their components and use them for replacement parts. Use them for bait, whatever. But do not get rid of your firearms, America. Don't get rid of them. Because once they get, you know, you sell them to somebody, you don't know who you're selling it to. You know, if you got a buddy that doesn't have a gun and you got an extra SKS, you may do like we did with Britain during WW2, give him the Lend-Lease Act and say, here's your SKS, here's, you know, 200 rounds of ammunition. When you get something better, give that back to me and we'll put it back in the pool to give out as a loaner gun. You know, don't just, I made too many mistakes when I was with the Minutemen. Good people, great people, but I gave away too many rifles thinking I was helping the cause and nothing came of it. There's a 44 Mag Ruger Deerfield rifle out there with my name on it floating around and I'm trying to get it back. I would love to have that up here. Great little carbine, nice little punch, great for the trees up here, great for wild boar. I loaned it out and never got it back. I sold my 50 cal. Well, that's different. I sold my 50 cal to pay for my daughter's jaw surgery that she needed. Good point there. Sergeant Slade, and I was going to go that branch, but I switched here. I didn't mean to. If the FBI does call you to, you know, see what you're up to, don't let them in your house. I call it the vampire rule. Once you let them in, it's your fault. I also have nothing to say to them. Five words, I have nothing to say. But it might be neat to say, yeah, meet me at the Denny's down the block. Just to see what they're doing. Then set up your security, your perimeter security, have people ready to go, because they're going to be doing that. And just talk to them and kind of be probing. Don't get cocky and think that you can outwit these guys. Just shut up and listen to what they have to say and be honest with them. Just say, look, I have no idea why you're looking at me. I'm just a red-blooded patriotic American following my constitutional rights. Why are you messing with me? Shouldn't you be down casing a mosque or something? You know, shouldn't you be over trying to catch Somali pirates from killing American citizens? Why are you wasting your time on me? Militia is completely defensive. We're not looking to start a war. We're looking to finish one that they start. And how are they going to start it? By kicking in your door and murdering your family and burning down your house. That's how they're going to do it. Did Mom ever get in there?
No.
No, she must really be sick if she's not in the chat room. Yeah, Sergeant Slade said, remember it was a friend that sunk Randy Weaver. People, acquaintances. I don't have any friends right now. I got my wife and my son. I don't even know if I trust the dog too much right now. He could be a plant. Look at him. Look at those beady little FBI-looking eyes of his. He looks, you know, Ruger's gotten pretty big, but I still don't trust him. But we're getting ready for a break here, folks. We're going to come back after the break. Remember to check out DutchJones.info. Check out the store. We sold one big overall house water filter. If you need a water filter, now is the time to get them. Before your dollar's not worth anything, we're going to be raising our prices. We'll be right back after this.
Living on that hill, living in that lot of luxury, on we the people's bill. Don't have a clue how the other half lives, and that is a shame. It's time to stop the tyranny. You keep pushing through your bills, calling for a revolution. Save our Constitution while we still got the guns in our hands. And there's a farmer who's starving on their land. The rancher tries to feed his cattle and sheep on we the people's land. Try and live as a free man. Your body is an eagle, let him home. Time to stop these thugs from stealing what's been got in the damn. Calling for a revolution. Calling for it now. It's time to see.
turn back the clock of a tyranny. For if we don't, then who will do it for ourselves? And how about our children? What kind of future will we live them? And if we won't, we'll wake up slaves on the boom of that nation, calling for a revolution, calling for it now. It's time to save our constitution while we still got the guns in our hands. Calling for a revolution, calling for it now. It's time to save our constitution while we still got the guns in our hands.
When the crash does come, when there is a natural disaster, during civil unrest, the last thing you want to be is a refugee. So check out DutchJones.info. That's www.DutchJones.info. We have the supplies you need and the information you will need. That's www.DutchJones.info. Okay, folks, we're back. This is the Dutch Jones Radio Program, giving you a militant Christian worldview coming from the Cahuilla Commonwealth right here in the middle of Central California, literally the belly button of California in the highlands. We're hill people. We're hill folk. You can call me hillbilly. I won't be offended. Right outside the front gate of Sequoia National Park, we're surrounded by federal land, some private land. And we are in it up to our eyebrows with tyranny here in California. Not just about Second Amendment stuff, code compliance, taxes, just the way they've trained 90% of the sheeple in the state. And yeah, I'm going to say 90% of the sheeple. Hey, Dutch is awake. But Dutch's redneck wife is awake, I mean. Stacy's awake. And we're fighting it here, folks. We're fighting it here. And it's going to get bad real fast where you are. Those, you know, it's going to be different things, different places. We were reading in the newspaper that in Idaho this week, the EPA, which is a force to be reckoned with of evil, went into people's private property and seized it because it had wetlands and they were trying to develop it for their own use. They'll take it. They'll just come in and take it. We were just talking, I was telling Stacy and Rocky, who were just here loading up Debbie and Rocky. Debbie and Rocky were here, and I was telling him that they need to have a yard sale. And then he says, well, you need a permit in the town he lives in of Exeter to have a yard sale, and that they're going around shutting people down for violation of the tax codes. Sergeant Slade says, and they're lone wolf as only you know what to do. See, I disagree with that. You have to fellowship with people. Lone wolf on a mountaintop, until they decide that they want you, yeah, that's fine. But the minute they decide that mountaintop might make a nice fire base or a retreat for their officers, then they're going to take you out. And if it's just you, there's nothing they're going to be able to do unless you want to stay on the run your whole life. That's the risk. We're talking about before the break, who do you trust? And I made the joke that I trust only Jesus in the chat room. You got to trust people to some degree. Respect everyone, trust no one completely, I guess is how I would say that. You do the best you can. Because it's a dichotomy, because if you're by yourself, if you're completely by yourself, what are you pointing to it for? I see it.
Your channel is messed up.
What do you mean it's messed up? Minuteman saying, well, my chat room's locked up. It's not showing anything anybody's done since about 2 minutes ago. Yeah, I've never come down to visit Minuteman either, although I do, because I want to come down and get my Unimog. And get that fixed and bring it back up here and store it up here. But you've got to trust people. You can't get through this without trusting some people, even if it's just a three-man fire team. But you got to realize that even in a three-man fire team, if one of those persons are compromised, they may sell you out. So let's put this in real terms that everybody, and you guys will have to, Lou will have to tell me if there's anything different in the chat room, because my mind's not even looking at it anymore. unless you've known them your whole life, and unless you would trust your wallet, your wife, and your children with them, you can't tell them everything. I've got a handful of people, well, less than five people that I would trust my family with. I don't have a wallet because I don't carry IDs and I don't have any money, so I don't need a wallet. But that's the way it is, and that's sad. But there are people in degrees of trust, people that you would trust with your back in combat, if only because, you know, they're next on the line too. Sometimes that's all you need. It's just trusting someone, you know, whose neck is on the line too, that if you get caught, they get caught. If they let somebody by them, then their family gets sacrificed. So you got to keep, you know, keep your eyes open and keep looking for good people. I don't think lone wolf is the answer. Now, you may operate tactically lone wolf. You may be a sniper or something. That's different. But living your entire life like a lone wolf is not going to – I just think that the odds are against you. There's a reason Jesus sent everybody out two by two, you know, groups of two or four or three or six. You know, we learn everything we need to know from the Bible, and this is one of those tactical things and strategic. It's a strategic thing. I can't even read the chat room, so if you guys are saying stuff, I apologize. I can't see anything. Maybe if I reset, see what I do. Oh, my whole computer's locked up. Oh, man. That's funny. We got a clear blue sky, and now it's messing it up the way it was before. That's weird. Let me close this. The phone number, if you'd like to call in, is 559-346-8362. We're using the cell phone now. The hard line is just too bad. That's 559-346-8362. 559-346-8362. And that's going to be number 3 and 4 here when that comes up. Let me make sure here. Yeah, it's that one. Everything's ready to go, so we're good there. I got to close some stuff here. Maybe I got too much stuff open. Let's see. I'm getting a comment here through. Why do I have these things open up down here? Can I close these?
Yeah.
Remind me later. And then this one is different. What was that? What's your dog trying to bite you for?
I don't know.
What'd you do?
You just squealed.
The thing that we're going to talk about this hour, people have been sending me a lot of stuff on the Somali pirate issue, and they want to know what I think. This is exactly what I think. And and we've discussed this a little bit before, but I haven't given my view on it. The law of the sea is if you catch a pirate, you hang them, you shoot them, you burn them, you do whatever. You kill them. You kill pirates. They take your ships in international water. They die. Now, that's all fun and well and easy for me to say. I'm sitting over here. I'm not a ship out in the Gulf of Aden. Number two, if you're going to sail in known pirate waters, you don't go unarmed. You don't go unescorted. If you're a commercial ship, you hire mercenaries to man your ship, or you train your crews, or you do like the Merchant Marines and put some deck guns on them. Three, you don't go crying to international armies, navies, Marine Corps for help when you get caught after you've been sailing in a known water with pirates and you did nothing to secure your own safety. There are all kinds of insurance companies out there that sell insurance if you're ever taken hostage, that sell insurance if you're attacked by terrorists. If you do business, if you're a missionary, if you want to go pleasure craft in the Gulf of Aden or anywhere, the Caribbean, anywhere there are known pirates, you're on your own. You either arm yourself or prepare somebody in advance to pay the ransom for you. Big corporations that go through there, oil tankers, cargo ships, whatever, you don't go crying to Uncle Sam's, you know, flotilla to come rescue you. I'm talking on Facebook right now with a few people there, and they're saying, oh, well, we've got a bomb Mogadishu or wherever they're coming out of, you know, that's great. That's wonderful. You know, you want to do, but why should we be risking soldiers for private commerce? Soldiers are to defend this nation against invasion, not against people going somewhere else and either proselytizing Jesus Christ, that's fine. If you want to be a missionary, you do like the old missionaries used to do, and you bring a gun. You hire locals to defend you. That's what we did when we went to Venezuela. When I was a missionary in Venezuela, we had hired guns that hung out with us because we couldn't bring guns into the country. So this thing that's going on with the pirates, it's ridiculous that it's gone on this far. If we want to keep our flotilla over there, you know, the Great White Navy over there, it's a waste of taxpayers' dollars. You know, if they want to protect the Suez Canal so that oil keeps getting through, that's different. They shouldn't be pulled off station to go rescue a bunch of, what is it now, Denmark? A family of four and two guests, or a crew and a friend, have just been taken hostage on a family yacht, which means the pirates are now switching to just kidnapping and not, you know, trying to get materials, you know, big multi-million dollar liners. They killed the four Americans last week. There were missionaries. They knew what risk they were taking sneaking Bibles into a Muslim nation. They chose to go in there without guns. They chose to go in there without a guide or some real men on board that were willing to fight. That's fine. It says I don't have... it says it crashed, Lou. Look, over here. So just redo it. Mm-hmm. So that's where I am on piracy. The law of the sea is pretty clear. If they board your ship and they try to take you hostage, shoot them in the face. If you somehow take them prisoner, give them about a 20-second trial and hang them from the yardarm. If you don't have a yardarm, shoot them and throw them overboard. There's no reason even to call anybody about it. Sending out maydays for the U.S. Navy to come protect, especially people from other countries. When you've got these foreigners going over to international water, but we're the biggest, baddest boys in the water over there for some unknown imperialistic reason, waiting to pick a fight with Iran, there is absolutely no reason that we need to be pulling everybody's feet out of the fire on this with piracy. And the reason Ethiopia, Mogadishu, all these guys, what kind of pirates? Somalia? Is because back in the 80s, remember all those idiot musicians that dumped all that food over there? When they poured those millions and millions and millions of dollars that everybody raised in the 80s for Live Aid and all that, that was the money that went directly to the Muslim warlords that they used to buy guns and stuff. As soon as the food got there, what did they do? They hoarded the food, didn't distribute to the people, and either sold the food on the black market or sold the food to the peasants and then used that money to arm themselves. It's a direct result of a big liberal push in the 80s. That's what created Somali pirates. That country's been under anarchy for, I think, 20 years now. It's been 20 years they've been in a state of anarchy. There's a provisional government over there that won't even leave its compound. It's none of our business. So if people choose to go into that, that's up to them. That's like me going into the Southeast LA and trying to hand out Bibles at 5 o'clock on a Saturday evening. Well, let's say 7 o'clock as the sun's going down. And being upset because I get shot in a drive-by and then blaming it on, you know, the U.S. military for not protecting me or LAPD. At-risk behaviors create at-risk results. So I don't have any sympathy for anybody that's traveling in that area. Nor do I think that we need to go in and have another Black Hawk Down scenario. Look where that got us under Clinton's war over there. It would be a waste of American lives. It's a waste of our tax dollars. If people want to go there, okay. You go into Indian territory, you might get scalped. I'm sorry to hear it. And I'm not one of these, you know, everybody says I'm a, you know, and I get these emails from the liberals and I have to erase their comments in our guest book. They think I'm some kind of war, you know, monger. No, I don't want a war. I definitely don't want our boys going over to Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran, Pakistan, and enforcing democracy on anyone. On anyone. Now, if these pirates are dumb enough to go after one of our Navy ships, just blow them out of the water. Don't arrest them and bring them back here and try them in civilian court. That's ridiculous. That circumvents long-standing laws. And that's the difference between us and our enemies. All those that would pervert the law. We believe in law. We believe in just civil government and laws and international agreements with just nations. They don't. They just keep changing the law so that it becomes such a confusion, a ball of stupidity that nobody knows what's right and what's not, and anything will pass as justice. Bringing pirates back to the United States to try them as civilians? I mean, come on. Didn't Disney just make a bunch of movie about pirates, and we saw in the beginning what they do to pirates? They hang them. You know, even Hollywood gets it right, and the government doesn't in this case. And it's funny because people seem to be angry with me because I am refusing to get on the bandwagon here on Facebook and say, hey, let's go nuke North Africa. You know, let's go get the Gulf of Aden and take it over. I don't want to take over anything. I don't even want the federal government taking over my county or my state. I don't want the state taking over our township. But yet these same so-called right-wing, freedom-loving constitutionalists want to go and push imperialism all around the rest of the world because some morons in a yacht decide to endanger their kids. Or because some well-meaning Christians knew what the chances were of being caught, got killed. Well, that's too bad. You know, they're with the church triumphant. They died in glory. Amen to that. Amen to that. But I'm not going to go to war over it. And I don't want any of our planes flying over some neighborhood and dropping 1,000-pound bombs on people that had nothing to do with the pirates that are out to sea, period. We never seem to get the people that are responsible anyway when we do this garbage. Like when we were watching Restrepo. That movie's going to stick in my head for a while. When they went in and they killed like five adults and wounded a bunch of children and women. And they're like, well, it's just what happened. So, you know, I feel bad that it happened, but, you know, that's what happens. Sergeant Slade, my chat room just came back, says, why go overseas to secure anything when they can't secure our own border? You know what? That is the God's honest truth. Isn't it, though? They can't even secure a neighborhood in Southeast L.A. I'll use that analogy. And yet they want to go and force demonocracy on other countries. It's weird. It's like the stuff that's going on right now in Libya. And I have been following it, and I know you get it everywhere else. But here's the Dutch Jones twist on this. They keep saying, oh, peaceful students are being gunned down. If that's true, then how come the students are winning? How come the students are taking city by city and block by block if they're really unarmed? If Gaddafi's mercenaries are the only ones shooting into the crowd, they'd be slaughtered. I mean, this isn't India. We're not talking about Gandhi here allowing thousands and thousands of his own people to be butchered until finally the crown is embarrassed into capitulating the independence of India. This is Gaddafi, a madman, a maniac, and a truly insane person. But it's his country. And he was doing fine for 41 years, I think it is. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, those students are armed. Those students are getting control and command information from CIA operatives. We've probably got an AWACS flying over Libya 24/7. The satellites are on. And they're telling these students, these Muslim Brotherhood folks, where to go and where to fight. Your tax dollars are right now trying to overthrow Gaddafi. And I know what you're thinking. You're saying that's great. Gaddafi, you know, he's responsible for Kililoro and Pan Am flight, whatever, whatever. I haven't forgotten those things. But why do you think he was able to stay in power for 41 years until now? Just like Noriega was able to stay in power in Panama. Because we allowed it. And he did something that made us mad. Maybe it's because he's old and the game plan has changed. Or maybe, you know, the New World Order is rotating a different command staff in. You know, what happens when a company gets taken over, new management comes in, they fire a lot of the key figures. And that's what they're doing in North Africa. They're getting rid of Mubarak and all these other countries, people's names we never heard of, that were playing ball with the U.S. Saudi Arabia is shaking in their boots. It's all being manipulated and everything that's going on. Who was it? I can't remember who it was. I think it was Roosevelt said during World War II, nothing happens politically globally that isn't planned. It's not. I mean, these things just don't blow up in their face and go, hey, wait a minute. Some little unknown student group in Egypt, or actually is Tunisia, started this? No. It's all manipulated. It's all calculated. So everybody's getting all excited about the demonocracy being restored. But let me tell you something. Just like I predicted it with the election, 6 months after the elections, nothing was going to change, and I got that right. Has it even been since November, December, January, February? It's been 4 months, and the Republicans are already ruined, you know, causing problems. And selling out, all those of you that believed in them. 6 months from now, after these, you know, Egypt, it's still going to be chaos. And overall, the same people will be in charge that were always in charge. The power elite of the world, the bankers, and those people. It's all part of having some place to send our military. Sergeant Slade's got it right here. We send our military overseas so that they can ignore what's going on in our own country, or they'll forget about it. Conditions our young men to be able to go house to house and take guns. Nothing's different. These student uprisings, they keep trying to say, oh, they're peaceful. And look what's going on in Wisconsin. Okay, all the student union or teachers unions, everything got violent in Wisconsin and refused to leave the Capitol. Well, now they can't do anything to them because the minute the police start busting heads in Wisconsin, they're going to compare them to Gaddafi. So it's all planned. They knew if they did this in Africa, they could start doing it here in America. Remember, March 12th, day of rage, folks, day of rage. March 12th is going to be a day of rage in America. And now our police, whether they're loyal to us or the New World Order, doesn't matter. They can't touch anybody because they'll be compared to Gaddafi and Mubarak and all the other unnamed towel head wearing folks. They're conditioning America through the media, through our schools, through our churches to get ready for their actions so that we all go, oh, this is great. I don't even want to get into the weird stuff people are sending me, you know, Project Blue Beam and all that stuff, all these alien UFO things going on, you know, end of the world scenarios. We got a bunch of people, I guess, in May, you know, a bunch of Christians think they're getting bailed out. It's pathetic. But there are a few of us, a residue, not a remnant, there's just a residue of us that are keeping our eye on the prize and we're keeping our hand on our pistol on our hip. Oh, speaking of that. I'm going to get the pistol out of the small of my back and set it up here. Anybody comes through that door, Lou, that's not your mom, shoot him. He said, okay. I love giving dramatic commands like that. Or the pastor, or the UPS guy, or anybody bringing me food or presents. Or, you know, don't shoot them either, okay? Only shoot bad guys that come through the door. There's a round in the chamber. Safety's off. It's ready to go. So while they're doing all that, what do we do? Everybody's got their panties in an uproar. Oh, what do? Sunday at church, there are a handful of people. Oh, it's getting terrible. We heard Lindsey Williams. Just keep doing what we're doing. Keep training, storing, fellowshipping, praying to God, praying to Jesus Christ, and exclaiming, no king but King Jesus as hard as you can. Well, they try and distract us with aliens and people coming from outer space. Don't buy into that stuff. Don't buy into the, you know, the UFO over the Temple Mount. I could care less. If it bleeds, it can die. They got a new movie coming out March 3rd, Battlefield LA, I think.
It's March 11th.
March 11th. Yeah, yeah, I think you're right. I thought it was 3/3/11. Maybe it's 3/11/11. But they're going to try and get in our minds about all this stuff, you know, to distract us, make us think there's going to be boogeymen coming from outer space. That's the way they do it. Just
that's
keep focusing on it.
One.
We're going to, huh?
I hope they make a riff track of that one.
A riff track? Yeah, we'll have to talk about that later. Minuteman asked me if the search stuff came in. Oh, yes, it did. We got in our helmets, our backpacks, and our vests. And all of our manuals. The manuals are here. We got those in. We're going to continue to be teaching CERT classes. Because not everybody's a warrior. There has to be people behind the lines that will dig through the rubble that was once our house or your house to save your loved ones so that you can continue to fight. So that's part of our full orb training here. We're going to continue the community emergency response team training. We're calling ours emergency response families. ERF, ERF. I like the way it sounds, ERF. The state came through for us and gave us helmets, little green helmets. The cool thing is the little green helmets and the vests and the backpacks, we can cross police and fire lines. Although I think when this thing sets off, there aren't going to be police or fire lines. It's just going to be chaos. So, we did get those helmets and stuff in, and they're all stored up in the ladies' room. Not the ladies' restroom, but the room where the ladies do all their sewing and everything. We have them stored in there. So remember for March, that's a good reminder here, March the 12th, we're going to have Code 20 training here. There's still a couple slots open. Contact me. That one is a paid training. It's $100. It's guerrilla warfare, cell warfare training for half the day and the other half of the day, depending on which group you're in. The second half of the day will be introduction to pistol, unless everybody, you know, we got people that know how to shoot. We'll evaluate you. We'll do an evaluation shoot. If people have got the basics down, then I'll start teaching some more advanced tactics. like the proper way to present your weapon in a tactical situation. You don't just swing it around and pull the trigger. We'll be shooting behind barricades, obstacles. We'll do some simulated shoot, don't shoot stuff. And we'll be doing that on March 12th. And that is a Christian Defenders and a Code 20 program in cooperation with the Church at Cahuilla. We're not running it. I just happen to be one of the instructors. There'll be two other instructors, or actually one other instructor, that is current active duty. We will refer to him only as Sergeant R, so he doesn't get in trouble. But he will be helping us. And then on the third Sunday of the month, we will continue the second half of our... I got to word these right, because I go from militia to community service, so community response force. So the CERT class this month will be part two of disaster medical operations. Now, the first one we did last Sunday was to show you what you don't know. We did a simulation. We gave them an overview of how to do it, and then we let them go. A lot of mistakes were made, but that's the point of doing the training. You don't learn anything if you don't make mistakes. If you're not making any mistakes, that means the trainer hasn't set up a good enough scenario for you. So this coming Sunday, it's not March yet, but the third Sunday in March, what's that date? Okay, I'm having trouble seeing again, Lou. 20th of March, that Sunday we'll be having another one following church service where we will be, I'm going to walk you through it. It's going to be hands on the head, hands on the shoulders, hands on the small of the back. It's going to sound like I'm doing square dancing, but I'm going to walk you through a head-to-toe assessment. I'm going to walk you through a patient evaluation for shock, breathing, and bleeding. And then I'm going to make it so you'll be confident in knowing what to do if a bomb goes off at the bingo parlor. And we'll do that, and you'll be, those of you that haven't been issued, in that one you will get your backpacks, your nice little helmet, and your blaze yellow vest, and then we're going to start talking about what you need to put in your backpack. You should have a lot of the stuff already. We've been talking about this for 6 months. Those of you that have your FOGs, your field operational guides, we ran out of those field operational guides. I printed up, we had, 40 printed up?
30,
but we had a lot of non-church people that wanted to buy them, and maybe that was a mistake. I shouldn't have done that because we were selling them for $5. They cost $4 to produce, so we're going to have another batch made up of those. But the good news is we do have the large student participation manuals, and we'll be able to give you those when you come out. Now, if you're not going to be able to make it to every training, we'll just loan you some gear, you know, the helmet and all that, but we ask that you return it. That way when we get more permanent party people here, because, I mean, I'm going to be honest, we're focusing on what we have in our community and our surrounding area. So if you come for one training, we'll let you borrow a little green helmet and stuff, but you're going to have to turn that in. Sergeant Slade is saying that the land that he purchased in Tennessee, he has to go to the dispatch office for emergency services to find out what his address is. Well, folks, that was the second half hour of the show. We'll be back after this break. We'll be on Liberty Tree Radio, and we'll continue to talk about training and what we're doing, and maybe I'll give you some more of Dutch's world view. We'll be right back after the break.
Communists and spies are making monkeys out of us. The bureaus and departments have been busy night and day. They're figuring out just how we gave our secrets all away. And Congress has appointed a committee, so they said, to find out who's American and who's a low-down red. They call him up to Washington to speak for Uncle Sam. But when they ask them what they are, they shut up like a clam. I wish they'd take and put me on the witness stand today. I'd shout so loud old Stalin could hear me all the way. I'm no communist, I'll tell you that right now. I believe a man should own his own house and car and cow. I like this private ownership, I want to be left alone. Let the government run its business and let me run my own. Our government is bigger than it ever was today. The more they hire to work for it, the more they have to pay. Our public servants should be proud and honest, you would think, instead of taking bribes and dressing up their wives and men. The taxes keep on going up, of that there is no doubt, but still they just can't take it in as fast as they dish it out. Our national debt is monster-sizing, growing every day. Our children's children still unborn are gonna have to pay. Our dollar used to be the soundest money on this earth, but now $2 won't even buy one good dollar's worth. Unless we stop inflation and take care of what we've got, the communists may win the fight and never fire a shot. Oh, I'm no communist, I'll tell you that right now. I believe a man should own his own house and car and cow. I like this private ownership, I want to be left alone. Let the government run its business and let me run my own.
When the crash does come, when there is a natural disaster, during civil unrest, the last thing you want to be is a refugee. So check out DutchJones.info. That's www.DutchJones.info. We have the supplies you need and the information you will need. That's www.DutchJones.info.
There is rebellion in the wind.
A new world order.
How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns are toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
Avenge me!
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in.
Put out an all-point bulletin. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens, what kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Dutch Jones. Jones.
Radio program.
And now for something completely different.
Greetings and salutations. This is a live version of the Dutch Jones radio program. It's the last day, which would be the 28th of February, 2011. Not the last day on Earth, just the last day of February. All you fanatics out there think the world's coming to an end because of a comet or a solar flare or the second coming of Christ. No, it's not going to happen. You know why we know it's not going to happen? Because no man knows the date. You may know the season, but you don't know the date. Well, we're coming to you live here. This is Stronghold Radio from Cahuilla, California, the Church of Cahuilla. We're literally in the research center, the library, as it were, of the church at Cahuilla under Pastor Warren Mark Campbell, who won't be here till Thursday. Now, we've been gone for a couple days off and on. We've had sicknesses. We've had Pacific storms coming in and dumping snow, washing out highways. It's been pretty fun here, and we have satellites, so we can't communicate with you when the sky is black and angry. Dark and angry, I should say. They'll say I'm being racist if I say the sky is black. But so we miss you guys, especially Liberty Tree Radio. And I'd like to thank Ed for getting us hooked up in there and sending it out to even more people. I can't get in the chat room right now, so I can't communicate with you. Every time I try to get in, it kicks me out. I think Lou's done something. Make it, and they didn't. We had a rough couple of days weather-wise, but today was beautiful up here, 60 degrees. We got our shooting range, all the barricades and obstacles constructed. I just finished putting the last coat of paint on our rifle rack out there. Now, we're not a huge, huge militia up here at Camp Cahuilla. And I decided that's what we're going to call it, Camp Cahuilla. I like the way that sounds, so pass that around. Because the militia part is separate from the church, both physically and spiritually. I mean, there are members of the church, the pastors in the militia, and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, the Church of Cahuilla and Camp Cahuilla are separate. And what we're going to be doing over the next several months is inviting people here for training. Some of it will be, you have to pay for it, but as much as I'm doing, it won't be fee-based. So you keep listening to the type of training we're doing, and it's available to those that are interested in fellowshipping and wanting to be part of our program here, or they want to take what we're doing and take it back to their home. Now, our pod people, and I know Olima's out there, our pod people are just raging with this stuff. They're taking these sermons, the radio shows, and I'm humbled by that, our Wednesday night Bible studies, and they're downloading all this stuff, and they're using it to start their own little groups across the country, you know, using it for Code 20, which we do on Tuesday. So stay tuned tomorrow in this time slot for Steve Klein. Practical Christianity on Thursdays with Pastor Warren Mark Campbell. I mean, this is awesome. And I am so thankful to everyone involved, all the listeners, the participants in our training. Minuteman came up for our training on Sunday. It was also a week ago Sunday, which is also a wedding and a training. And he's going to be here for other trainings. And when, if I announce them on here, they're open to people. You just have to make arrangements to get here somehow. I know, we're on the left coast, and you can't believe we're actually doing militia training here. We are. The pastor's daughter, Joycey, and Lou are going to start setting up a training page on the church's website to reach out to that group, too, because they have a lot of followers there that need to know about the Marshall side of things. And so they're going to see. We've taken pictures at all the trainings we do, and we're going to be doing that. And when that's up, when Lewis finally gets that done, of course, pastor's daughter just went on a one-month sabbatical. So I don't know. Maybe you could design the page, and then when she comes back, we'll add her stuff to it. But we're really moving forward here. We are reaching out hard here from the Church of Kaweah, folks. We're opening our doors to like-minded folks, people that share our basic gospel and martial patriotic attitude. People may think, oh, man, they're a little weird up there. They mix their militia with Christ. Well, that's the way it used to be. That's traditionally the way the church in America was until recently. So it's not us that are weird. It's the rest of America that's become altered or abhorrent or followers of a wrong path. That doesn't mean you can't come back over. It doesn't mean that if your eschatology is different, that's the study of end times, your end times beliefs are different. We're not going to mock you. We believe more in the solid, the brotherhood of Christ than some things, you know, than we do, you know. If you believe in a different eschatology, we're not going to chase you off. But you got to believe in the basics. You got to believe that the gospel is meant for all of God's creations, all the humans, regardless of their race, creed, or color. We don't allow racists here. We tried that, and I have to admit that was partially something that I convinced people here to do. I said, let's reach out to these guys and see if we can transform their hearts and minds. Well, one, that's the wrong attitude. I can't transform anybody's heart or mind. That's up to God. And it was just a disastrous effort. I mean, we had one person that came over. Of all the others, they just went away mad because we wouldn't give in to their way. And it's still happening. There's still a residual off that. People that want to be, you know, racist Nazi scumbags and still come to our church are like, no, you can't. So, but, you know, that's probably more information than most people want to hear. But if you want to fellowship with us, yeah, you can come in. Fellowship with us, get to know us, and we're looking for families. We need 3 to 4 strong families to come here and live on the property, live in the community, not 30, 40 miles away. We're talking 5 to 10 minutes away, because let's face it, when this stuff happens, it's going to be hard for you folks in the Valley to get up here. It's going to be hard for you folks in L.A. to get out of L.A. I'm not going to pull any punches or kiss any boo-boos here and say, oh, everything's going to be okay. No, it's going to be ugly, real ugly, real fast. And if you're not paying attention to what's coming over the horizon, you won't have time to get out. So we need people here that are willing to do the work. And one of the things that we're really focusing on is training people to be supportive of those folks that are going to be defending, you know, the ugly stuff. The militia guys that are going to be out fighting, which I'm not one of. I'm too fat, too old, too broken. Unless things change drastically and a miracle is performed in my physical and health situation, I'm not going to be a frontline troop, but guys like Lou will be. But what we're doing is we're trying to have a full orb training for this. We're not just training on the range and training people on patrol and training people in operational stuff. We're also conducting at the same time rear guard stuff, medical stuff, operation, day-to-day operations of what's going to become our garrison here. Something hit the roof, didn't it? Mm-hmm. Hopefully it was a branch or another turkey. Something big just landed on our roof, and I heard a thump. But we're not just focusing on punching holes in papers. We do so much more than that. We do tactical shoot and scoot stuff. We do patrols. But we're also training people what happens if the enemy starts dropping large bombs on our civilian population. Now, we can learn from great people like Peter Hammond, who's over in South Africa, and he's fighting the Muslims and the communists there in the Sudan. You know, they have a hope for peace now, but we'll see. And he's been to where churches and whole villages have been bombed, and he saw that there was a lack of community helping itself out from under the debris. So that's why we've taken a broad look, and from my experience in fire services and stuff, and emergency services, I saw there's already a package out there, and it's community emergency response training. So that's what we took, CERT, CERT. Actually, if you're doing it the Celtic way, it would be CERT, just like the Boston Celtics or Celtics. So I don't know why they call it CERT. It's a C, but it's Community Emergency Response. A lot of people are going, oh, I can't believe that's FEMA. Oh, you're going to let them in. No, we don't let them in. We're not associated with them. But guess what? Our tax dollars paid for equipment. Our tax dollars paid for people to come up with training doctrines and manuals and procedures that we can adapt. We may not adopt them all. So we got those, and we brought them in. And we got these really neat little green helmets that say CERT on them, C-E-R-T. We got these really neat little Dayglo vests where they're kind of yellow. And then we got some really good backpacks that we're going to issue to everybody. We got 40 of everything. We got 40 manuals and two instructor manuals. Now, when I was with the fire department, I taught this class. So we're teaching people. Right now we're working on the disaster medical operations, but you could call it battlefield medical. You could call it first responder. You can call it whatever you want. We're just calling it disaster medical operations. And what we're dealing with now is when people come upon whatever the mechanism of injury is, but it's traumatic, multiple casualties, a mass casualty incident, an MCI, how to take what resources you have, what personnel you have, trained and untrained, and save the most lives in the least amount of time. We use triage, which means to sort or put in order. It's a French word. Napoleon came up with it first on the battlefields of Europe. And the ambulance system that he came up with, the battlefield ambulance, it's kind of copied after that. And it's dealing with removing debris, treating those that you can save, and letting the others die. We're going to have limited resources, folks. There's a certain line that when somebody crosses it, it's a waste of resources to use on that person. That doesn't sound very Christian, does it? I don't know, all you regular mainline militia guys that are not Christian, see, that's not very Christian. Actually, it is. Is it better to waste a bunch of plasma on somebody who's going to die when we know they're going to die because of the severe insult to their body, the trauma that they've suffered, when we can use 3 pints of blood to save 6 people? That wouldn't be very Christian, now would it? To not do the most amount of good to the most amount of people. So that's what we're training in now, and that's what we're focusing on. We're setting up a training area here at Camp Kahwea, where we're gonna have, you know, you're gonna have to move blocks of concrete and main beams off of support buildings. We're putting together a nice little collection here. But the first things first, you got to teach people first to be able to make decisions in that split second when that goes off, to do it safely, because the number one thing is the rescuer's safety is paramount, because you can do a lot more good alive than you can dead. So you want to protect that person. So you got to get them in the mindset. Give them the basic tools and the ability to salvage tools from their surroundings after, let's say, like what we're training for is we focus it on a terrorist bomb going off. But it could just as easily be a bomb drop from an aircraft on our church on a Sunday afternoon. And if you don't think it's going to come to that in America, it will someday. Maybe not in my lifetime, but it will. So I'm trying to impart this knowledge base on people that are willing to do it. So you want to set up a training scenario that's realistic. The one we pulled here was a terrorist sets off a bomb in a community center on a weekend. Because we have a community center here and a lot of people go there. And I had 10 victims and they had to go in and evaluate them and remove them and do things. Now that's, some people they go, oh yeah, that's easy to do, I could do that. No, you can't. Unless you've done it a dozen times, you're not going to be good at it. You may think you have the ability to go in and do it, but you don't. You forget things. You go from what's the opposite of gross motor skill, Lou?
Fine motor skill
to gross motor skill. Yes, like in tactical situations, you do the same thing in life-saving situations.
Look at the list of what happens to you it's a good
analogy. We should share that someday. Lou's going to try and find it, but it just what happens to your eyesight narrows, your dexterity gets worse. Your thinking ability goes, your thunker shuts down, you stop being able to thunk right, and you've got to learn to operate with those tools, those emotional, mental, and physical tools, not even talking about you haven't gotten your backpack yet. So we're training people how to establish head to toe. We start at the head, because why? Because usually an injury to the head is the most critical injury you can get. Not all the time, you know, if your heart's laying out, it doesn't matter if your head's clean, but we start head to toe assessment, front and back. limbs. You check them for bleeding, breathing, and shock. Breathing first. Breathing, bleeding, and shock. If you can't get them to breathe after two attempts, there's no use in wasting more resources on them if you have more casualties that you can save. Now, if you can come back, you know, after, if you've only got two subjects, you get one stabilized and come back. It can be as simple as just clearing the airway, stabilizing the airway by putting a towel under their neck, and they start breathing again. You don't do CPR on the battlefield. You don't do CPR. If you're in a trench or something, yeah. If you're in a blown-up church, you don't know when the enemy's coming again. You don't know when they'll be evacuated to any type of treatment center. You don't waste time with CPR. So you get their breathing going. That may mean scooping a bunch of teeth and bone out of their airway or concrete dust or whatever it is. Vomit. Clear their airway. Head tilt, chin lift. Stick a rolled up towel or whatever you got, a brick under their neck if that's all you have. Get that airway open. Then you look for massive bleeding. And you control the bleeding with direct pressure, tourniquets, whatever you got. Stuffing that wound with a t-shirt. Then you treat them for shock. Elevate the feet. Cover them with a blanket if you got it. And then you move on. Once you've stabilized that victim, you move on to the next. You mark them. We go through all that. But that's the kind of stuff you're going to have to learn in the class. But if I'm out on a hilltop on an LPOP and I see him drop a bomb, am I going to be able to leave my position to run down the hill to our community building because I'm the one that has those skills? No. If I'm on an LPOP, my job is to stay there and watch for further threat. So you've got to make sure all your rear guard people are trained in these basic triage skills. They don't have to be nurses. They don't have to be doctors. All they have to do is go through these basic low-level stabilization. And then after that, you teach them transport. You establish a treatment area out in a parking lot or at a pre-established, you know, if you have a...
I posted all the things that...
Luke posted a bunch of stuff in the chat room if you guys want to look at it. Yeah, I'm not going to go into it. I can't even read today. My eyes are so bad. But if you don't prepare the people behind the lines, there's no point in being on the lines. Because it's just going to be like Sherman. He's going to go around behind you and destroy them. But if you can give them some basic skills, aside from being able to shoot and scoot, but to keep themselves functioning so they can keep you supplied on the front line, that may win you the battle when you don't even get a chance to see the enemy. Setting up shelters, infirmaries, pre-staging medical equipment, pre-staging rescue equipment, picks, shovels. It's not going to be easy and clean. Think about the Blitzkrieg during World War II. Think about the earthquake that just occurred in New Zealand. They'll be digging people out, you know, the recovery. But in those first few hours, simply just uncovering the wounded may be enough to stabilize them. But if you don't have the raw tools to dig, let me tell you something. Digging in broken concrete and rebar and wood and drywall and chicken wire and all the stuff that makes up houses today, whether they're new or old, with bare hands, I don't care if you're a lumberjack. After a while, your hands are going to be shredded. Stockpile gloves. We just buy as many gloves as you can and pre-stage them all around. The little paper respirators. Secondary injury of the rescuers is huge. Respiratory problems from inhaling all of the small particulates. That's what knocked out a lot of the firemen at my fire station after they came back from the Twin Towers. I think all of them are no longer firemen now, and it's only been, 10 years? 10 years? And they're not firemen anymore because of the stuff they inhaled. Pry bars. A pry bar is critical for cribbing. You've got to learn cribbing. You've got to learn all this stuff. And it gives your non-combatants something to do. We've only got a few people that are... other than sitting in a chair and yelling commands, which is still useful, we've only got a couple people like that, honestly. Even the older folks can have bedside manner when you drag bodies... Not bodies, because they're not dead. When you drag survivors out and lay them on a tarp in the parking lot, you need somebody out there too. The elderly folks can be out there and be checking their vitals, marking which ones are critical, which ones need immediate care, which ones are dead. Keeping track of where everybody goes, the bookkeeping of it. Nothing worse than after a disaster and you get all the phone calls, where's my loved ones? We don't know.
Was their house wiped out? Yeah, there's just a foundation there now. It burned to the ground. Where did they go? We have no idea where they went. How would you like to do that? In a conflict situation, even more so. Look at the war in Bosnia and Herzegovina, the Serbs, the Croats, the refugee situations. Knowing where people sent is critical for record keeping. So even in a small community like ours, if we send somebody to the doc's office, or we send somebody to the dentist office, because yes, dentists are an asset and they can treat wounds, or we send them to the community center, we need to keep records of that. So even if your people, you know, you teach them the basics, you know, how to plug a hole when it's bleeding, how to apply a tourniquet, and what the proper protocols are for a tourniquet, you'll also need people for bookkeeping. You'll need couriers. You'll need people to run bandages. If nothing else, just like the old movies, what do they tell the men to do when the woman starts giving birth? Go boil water and make bandages. You take your biggest idiots and you get them boiling water and tearing bandages. Now, if you've done this right, you've already got case and case of bandages. Where do you get them? Well, we're strong believers in feminine hygiene pads. We're strong believers in the adult diapers. We had somebody who donated just a truckload of adult diapers to us. Everybody's like, what do we need those for? Wound care people. You've got people with all kinds of injuries and they're bedridden. They're non-ambulatory. Put a diaper on them. It'll keep the fecal matter in the urine out of their wounds. You don't want to be emptying. What's better? Go empty bedpans or be wiping their hinies? Or just changing a diaper on them and taking it out and burning it in the refuse pile with the limbs and the bloody bandages? You got to be thinking ahead on these things. Don't just think the glory, you know, how many magazines, how much ammo can you carry, how many grenades can you carry, can we get an RPG? That's such a small portion of winning a victory over your enemies. How you treat your wounded, how you care for your refugees, how you care for your civilians that you're here to protect is by far more logistically challenging than moving troops in the field. It is. One, because you're dealing with a huge undisciplined population. I can tell you this. When I'm training people now, I yearn for the days when I was in the Army or even the fire department. Because at least when people came to me, they were there because they wanted to learn specific things so that they could be promoted. Not even if it was so that they could be better warriors or better firemen. I'm going to be honest with you. Most of them, they just wanted it because it looked good in their jacket. It looked good in their personnel file. Now when I'm training people, I always have three or four people. They're just there because their spouse dragged them to, or they want a fellowship, they want to socialize, and they'd want to tell jokes. They want to make light of it. Either they're so afraid that this may actually happen that they don't come to terms with it and just shut up. It is much harder for me to manage 50 civilians than it would be 500 prior service soldiers. Not that I'm a leader, but if I were thrust into that by God, I would do my best. 50 civilians is a nightmare to run. 50 civilians is far worse than 500 soldiers, as long as those soldiers are trained and understand their missions. And I think anybody who's ever been in a leadership position can understand why I'm saying this. It's like herding cats, trying to get them to pay attention. Even though the material that I train people in is usually dumbed down to about a 7th grade level, because I'm using military stuff, and I try to keep the word small, there are always people that just aren't going to get it the first 3 or 4 times around. You need them to get it, so you have to be a good instructor and keep trying. And it part of the instruction process is also deciding what tasks you're going to put these people in. They may not like it. There's always somebody who has to go dig latrines. Is it glory in digging latrines? No, but is it important? You betcha. Improper dealing with human waste will kill your population of people faster than an enemy bomb or enemy raiders or snipers. Poor dealing with your wounded, poor dealing with your waste products, not being able to feed that many people. Logistics with your civilian population is going to be what wins or loses this revolution coming up. You don't agree with me? Then you haven't been to war, or you haven't studied war. You haven't been anywhere where serious bodily harm was being done and things were being broken. Because I've learned that armchair warriors are the first people to go, that'll take care of itself. Will it? If you're going to be a warrior for Christ, you've got to deal with these issues. If you're going to be a warrior, period, and you want there to be any positive outcome of what you're risking your cojones for, You have to deal with training these civilians in the rear. You have to deal with giving them tasks. We've got huge piles of metal laying around here. Over the years, people have just dumped metal, angle iron, because we always thought it would be good to have one day when we need to do stuff. Well, we had an evaluator come in. He said, you know what? Put your civilians to work doing that first. Have them sort it. Teach them what different types of metal are, you know, the zincs and the galvanized and, you know, what can be welded, what can be salvaged, what is good for shrapnel, what's good, you know, all this stuff, and you have them categorize it. You've got to keep the civilians busy as soon as they show up. That's for the low-order untrained ones. But if you have a whole cadre of trained civilians, they're going to be the leaders. And they can start pulling people out. Who here has medical experience? Oh, I was a dental assistant. Okay, you come with me. Oh, I was a Boy Scout and I learned all this stuff. Okay, you come with me. And that way, those of you that have to go outside kill things and break people aren't going to have to worry about what's going on behind you. That you know when you come in at night, there's going to be a hot and a cot. Now, that's ideal, of course, and I know Murphy's Law, that every plan gets thrown out the window as soon as, you know, the war starts and the shooting starts. But another thing you're going to do with this training, like we're doing here, is you're going to build esprit de corps. Another fancy non-American word. You're going to, you know, pride in the unit, a spirit of working together. And it's going to help you evaluate now while things are relatively in a period of grace. Who's going to be your leaders? Who are you going to be your go-to men and women? Who will you be able to count on? Now, it's not always 100% true. Sometimes the best rescue ranger in training, the minute he sees blood and guts on the side of the road, locks up. It happens. Happens to everybody. Watch Restrepo when one sergeant gets shot in the face and one of his guys breaks down in tears, starts freaking out and asking everybody if it's a joke or if he's really dead. Your best soldiers are going to freak out. Keep watching the clock, dude. And there's no reason why when we have this period right now that you can't be doing this. There's no excuse for not training your civilians. When we come back, we're going to talk a little more about this. You're listening to Stronghold Radio from the Church of Cahuilla and our sister network, our big sister network, Liberty Tree Radio. We'll be right back.
Yeah. missing out.
The enemy comes in, roaring like a flood, coveting the kingdom and hungering for blood. The Lord will raise a standard up and lead his people on. The Lord of hosts will go before, defeating every foe, defeating every foe. For the Lord is our defense, yes.
When the crash does come, when there is a natural disaster, during civil unrest, the last thing you want to be is a refugee. So check out DutchJones.info. That's www.DutchJones.info. We have the supplies you need and the information you will need. That's www.DutchJones.info.
It's like pan flute music. Kind of reminds me of the MASH theme. Since we're talking about injuries, is that where you're playing that? It's not like the theme to MASH. Oh, folks. We're back. This is the Dutch Jones Radio Program on Stronghold Radio, coming to you from the Church at Cahuilla in Cahuilla, California, and graciously simulcast on our big sister network, the Liberty Tree Radio Network. We appreciate that, reaching millions every day, right? From our tens of tens to tens of thousands. We appreciate it. You're listening to the Dutch Jones Show, where we deal with the militant Christian worldview, and we're talking about preparing your people for disaster medical operations. Now, some of the common problems, and we're just going to jump right back into it, when I'm training people, especially if we're doing simulations, when I used to have all the fancy moulage stuff, or even in real world, When I was a firefighter and I'd roll up on a traffic collision and there's serious injuries, you'll see people focusing on the blood and the gore. You've got to train them in a way that they can snap out of that. They will literally freeze up. Now, they may focus on a massive injury that is traumatic to look at and traumatic to the victim, like an avulsed leg above the knee, which means it's just chopped off. But the body has some incredible defense mechanisms. Now, God made it, and sometimes it's ingenious, that when the leg gets cut off, it actually will constrict the blood vessels, tighten around it, and will stop bleeding on its own. There'll be some oozing and things like that. But in the movies where they show them squirting a clean cut, depending on the mechanism of injury, it'll just be a guy missing an arm, and it won't be bleeding much at all. And the spontaneous rescuer will be looking at this, the wife, the husband, or God forbid the parent, starts freaking out. And they're not paying attention to another injury that may look smaller in its size, but is far more dangerous to the continued life of that victim. So they'll focus on the avulsed arm or knee or missing foot, and they're missing the gaping chest wound. Where they have a sucking chest wound, they can't breathe, and they'll die because they're not breathing. Or they'll deal with the person on the ground, deal with what they can see. You know, they've got them breathing, they're stopping the bleeding on certain wounds. They won't roll them over and check the back. And there can be extreme life-threatening wounds on the back that you didn't see. Especially if you come across a person, you didn't see the mechanism of injury, you don't know how they landed where they did, you don't know what propelled them there. Gunshot wounds are a prime example. If they're not through and through gunshot wounds, you'll find, it was one of the earliest mistakes I made as an EMT riding along. You know, you start checking them. You find the entry wound, but you don't go looking for the exit wound. And it takes a few times before you start looking for it. And they may be bleeding internally and not have an exit wound. So you've got to feel around. You've got to look for things. I told the story of where we went to a nursing home where an elderly female had fallen out of bed and was complaining about hip pain and couldn't get back up. So immediately I focused on broken pelvis or femur. like you always do. It ended up being a ball joint injury, we found out later. So I'm doing my best. You know, this is during my internship before I was actually certified as an EMT. I was riding along with AMR in Riverside County at the Riverside County Trauma Center out there in Moreno Valley. And so I'm doing the, you know, everything. I'm getting her history. I'm talking to her. I'm nice. She's calming down. You know, we put her on the... I didn't do a head-to-toe survey. She had hit the back of her head, too, and had a gaping hole in the back of her head, and it wasn't bleeding because she had poor circulation issues. So I'm sitting out there filling out my paperwork at the nurse's station, trying to do my best EMT pose in my, you know, really nice-looking blue cargo pants and my white uniform shirt. And the ER doc comes and goes, who brought this lady in? I did. Who did the head-to-toe assessment? Why, I did. You missed this huge hole in the back of her head. I felt like an idiot. After that, I guarantee you, every time I don't care if they're having a heart attack, I do a head-to-toe assessment. Front, back, armpits, everything. You put your hands behind their head and you look at your gloves, see if there's any blood. You feel. There's ways that you can manipulate the bones. You check for what's called crepitus, the crunchy feeling if something's wrong. You check using opposing force on their limbs because they may just be complaining about that big chunk of rebar sticking out of their face. But that may not be what's going to kill them. It could be the small piece of shrapnel that went in and is creating a tension pneumothorax. Go look that up. I don't want to have to explain it. But getting your people systematically to all do the same thing, head-to-toe assessment, front-to-back, checking for circulation, checking for shock, not doing major stuff, not, you know, reaching in and doing open heart chest massage, you know, just stabilizing the people in a calm and orderly way. Sometimes the rescuer can trigger shock, especially with children. If you come up on children, they're just sitting there all quiet, and you notice that they're, you know, their knees bent the wrong way and you freak out, the kid will go into shock. The kid will start freaking out. Attitude is everything. Attitude is everything. And it's all-encompassing. I can't do it on the radio, but I'm trying to get you to think about these things so that when you put together your training for your family, at the very least, or for your community, or your militia, your church group, you find these things out. You know, of course, safety is key. You want to check the situation to make sure it's safe. You do a 360 security check of the whole area before you rush in. Does anybody really do that? Not always. You can do it quick. Like when I do my head-to-toe assessment, next training cycle, people were spending 5 minutes just looking at the victims in our scenario and not treating them. Several victims weren't even treated. They were left to bleed out because they just focused on a chest wound instead of a leg wound. I told several of the victims, I said, hey, if they try to get you up, walk on your own. And the first thing I told everybody, your goal is to get everybody to self-rescue. Your goal is to walk into a room full of wounded people and scream as loud as you can, we're here to help, come to the sound of my voice. And you do that a couple times and people will come to the sound of your voice and you start treating them in the parking lot because it's much safer to treat people in the parking lot than in a room that's just had a bomb dropped on it or a suicide bomber setting himself off. Are you tracking with me? Are you picking up on that? So then you go in and you find people that they're on the floor because of the initial shock of whatever the mechanism of injury is, but after a few seconds, they may be able to get up and walk out. So you're treating them and you're, oh no, don't get up, don't move, you're going to, you know, you move, don't, you could paralyze yourself. No, not in this situation. You say, you know, you look at them, you see that they don't have, like, you know, bone sticking out of their thigh, there's not a 2x4, you know, embedded in their crotch. You go, okay, if I can get you up, can you walk towards that door? There'll be another rescuer there. Yes, you help them. None of my people the victims that I said, if they help you up, you run out the door and you say, no, I'm fine. Once they get you up and dust you off, you can go. You just have an elbow injury. That didn't happen because you forget that. You want to play nursemaid. You want to play, you know, Dr. Kildare in these situations. And that happens every time, and it's going to happen in the real world. You're, oh, no, don't move. Well, if the person can move, I want them to move in a wartime scenario, in a terrorist scenario. Alongside the road in a rollover vehicle, somebody's thrown 20 feet from the vehicle, they're not in risk of the vehicle blown up, leave them stabilized. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about bad people doing bad things to good people, and you don't know who's going to follow up. You want to get them out, stabilized, and move them on to treatment as fast as you can and secure the area. You want to train your rear area people to do armed security. You know, as sad as it sounds, you're going to have some, you know, depending on your resources, you may say, okay, we only got four people that can go in and triage the victims. The other four have to take four points of the building, four corners of the building, and secure it. secure, you know, don't let any hostiles come in. Because the stuff like we're seeing in South Africa that was happening in the Sudan, they drop a bomb on a building, throw a grenade in, and then come in and spray machine gun fire when the rescuers were there. And if they're doing it in Africa, they'll do it here. I'm talking about the Muslims with the help of the Chinese communists, the Chai Coms. So no matter what the conflict is, you have to assume the enemy's going to seize the moment and try and do as much damage to your resources as they can. And what better thing to do than to kill all the trained people that are now rushing in? They have a time delay device to go off during the church service, and they wait. They know the response time is going to be about 22 minutes, and then they have secondary devices go off. You don't want to be hanging around in there. They may not even be in the area. They may not even wait to start shooting. They may just have a secondary device in a trash can that's going to go off. That's a whole other class I teach, response to a terrorist incident, being aware of secondary devices, how you conduct your radio communications, how you conduct your search of the room to make sure it's safe. The goal is to remove the people from the danger, because secondary collapse is the leading cause of death in firefighters in America. They go into a burning building. They love to save life. They love to fight fires, whether they're pyros or not. I got a lot of opinions about firefighters. Secondary collapse. They're in there fighting the fire. The structure falls down. It may not even be initiated by an enemy. It may just be the building couldn't handle the initial insult that it suffered, and the roof falls in and kills all your rescuers and every other chance. Get everybody out. You'll go, but if you move them, they could be paralyzed, or they're going to be dead if they stay. We can fix a lot of the broken stuff. We cannot fix any dead. As far as I know, nobody's able to do that yet. I've yet, you know, no. Nobody's raising the dead except for Jesus, right? It's like we had scenarios in the Northridge earthquake. We were rolling people out of windows when the tremors, so-called aftershocks are hitting. We're almost as strong as the primary. And people are going, oh, I saw those firemen. They were just hanging somebody out a window. Well, if we'd have left them in there 30 seconds later, they'd have been dead. As far as I know, nobody I transported had any loss of mobility because I grabbed them by the legs and ran. You know? This is a different scenario. This is, the danger is there and it's continued. It's not a vehicle rolled. It stopped. It didn't blow up like in Hollywood and everything's okay. You know, in 30 minutes, the ambulance is going to have them in the emergency room. There'll be surgeons and hundreds of thousands of dollars of equipment. No, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about they're probably going to die if you don't do something right now. And let me tell you something. If I was a victim and they didn't move me because they were afraid of stabilizing my neck and I knew there was a second bomb falling or there was risk of a secondary collapse or secondary devices and they left me in there to die, I'd be pissed. But on the other hand, if they'd have grabbed me, dragged me out, and I lost the use of my legs but I was still alive, I'd be thankful I was still alive. Americans have got such a weird attitude, and it's the litigation attitude. Oh, I'm afraid to help anybody. Because I might get sued if I move them and I paralyze them. And I've seen that happen. I've seen policemen sued. I've been involved in cases where sheriff's deputies have been investigated by the highway patrol because they removed somebody from a vehicle because they were afraid it would explode and they ended up causing more injury when they cut that seatbelt when they were upside down. I personally have been there when that's happened. And I understand that. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about massive casualties. Bad people doing bad things to good people, and it's time to get realistic. It's time to do some real where the rubber meets the roads kind of training and preparing even your cooks to deal with this stuff. Because soft target strikes are going to be real easy, I think, in this coming war. With the number of infiltrations and surveillance that they have on us, they can hit us when we're having chow, they could hit us when we're at church, they can hit us when we're playing a soccer game and we think everything's okay. It's not going to be nice and pretty where there's going to be a safe area behind the lines. Think Civil War. There were no safe areas for the Southerners, were there? The savage federal troops went south and butchered women and children wherever they were, burned their crops and starved them out, raped and pillaged, both black and white, free and slave. They didn't care. The marauding armies of the North, it's going to be that kind of conflict. The federal troops that are going to come for your kin aren't going to care. The Chai Coms that come for your kin are not going to care. Oh, this is a demilitarized zone. Oh, this is civilian zone. Oh, we're not allowed to shoot after 5 p.m. on Thursdays. It ain't going to be that kind of war, folks. It's not. So if you're one of those guys that doesn't let your wife or children involved in this, you've got problems, mate. I've been talking to Australians and New Zealanders all day. You got a problem, mate. You're not being a good leader of your family. You're not being a good priest of your house. If you're not at least preparing them to be able to stop their own bleeding, if you're not preparing them to evacuate, if you're not preparing them to deal with supplying ammunition to those guys on the wall, it's going to take every set of hands we've got to fight this battle that's coming up. I'm not saying scare the, you know, the, I almost said bejesus, and that's not what I meant to say. Scare, don't paralyze them with fear. Because knowledge counteracts fear. But just having the knowledge of it isn't enough. You have to put their hands to work. Faith without works is what? Useless. Just like knowledge without works is useless. You can have all the book reading you want, but until you've had to carry a 160-pound guy on a stretcher to a triage area and actually go through the motions of stopping his bleeding and evaluating his mental state and all that kind of stuff, you won't know how to do it. You won't know how to, and even all the training in the world is still not going to guarantee how these people are going to react when the bombs start going off or when that maniac comes into your church and starts shooting a gun. And you got 10. What was it? Loeffler had 19 people shot or something, and Loeffner, whatever his name was, in Arizona, 19 people. That is a mass casualty incident, folks. Anything more than 2 to me is mass casualty. Unless you've got unlimited resources, you're going to have full on panic on your hands when that happens if you haven't pre-trained your people and pre-educated your people. And I don't know how much time we have left, not for the show, but for America. And it's going to be gradual. The cities are going to go first, so if you're in a city, you better get on it tomorrow. Get all the training you can. Learn everything you can about this. Have trauma kits pre-positioned anywhere you're going to have more than 2 people hanging out. Everybody should already have their own personal first aid kit. 2 pressure bandages, a tourniquet. That's only if you're wounded in 2 different locations. Then you should have extra for your whole family, a platoon size kit, a squad kit for your family, platoon for your block, whatever. Get sanitary napkins. If you can't afford fancy schmancy pressure bandages, get what you can. Pre-sealed, individually sealed ones are the best. Yeah, people may laugh at you, but who cares? I want to be able to stuff something in a bullet wound. I want to be able to put something against the wound that I can wrap with a bandana if that's all I got. I want something sanitary and clean. I don't want to create more problems later because I'm using, you know, a pair of blue jeans that I cut off the victim and stuff it in the wound, but you do that if you have to. But why should you do that if you just do a little bit of pre-planning? Stop spending money on cigarettes and beer and the porn channel. Stop spending money on pay-per-view NFL and start spending it on getting your family ready. I get so furious when people that I know personally who go, yeah, I'd love to go to your training, but that guy you brought in, he wants $150 for 3 days training. Okay, you're too retarded to hang out with me anymore. Leave. I'm tired of hearing that stuff. People who don't want to invest in the futures of their families, it's pathetic to me. They're worse than cowards. At least a coward, you know, he's struck by fear and won't do it. These people are struck by greed and laziness, which is far worse. I'll take a coward any day. I can slap him around and make him do something, but somebody who's lazy and greedy and selfish, they're of no use to me. I don't know of any way to motivate those folks. And you may want to trim that kind of fat out of your group right now. Some people will mistake lazy for somebody who just doesn't get it. There's a difference. But somebody who, no matter what you present to him, whatever training opportunity, any task you give him, he just doesn't want to do it. Radio. You know, you say, hey, communications. You don't want to be a frontline guy? Communication. Oh, you want to do medical? Okay, do logistics. Do obtaining donations of materials. Everybody has a role to play in this. There are many parts of the body of Christ. Just like at a church, there's different tasks. And you're not going to find out what people are good at unless you offer them the opportunity. If you're just sitting back waiting for everybody to come to you in your group and go, hey, I want to do this, I want to do that, then you're the problem. You're a bad leader. Maybe you don't want to be a leader and you have to recruit a leader. That's something altogether different, and that's something you need to work on. I am not a leader. I'm a trainer. I don't want to have to lead anybody again. Not because I'm lazy, but because people don't like to be led by me because I don't play games. I'm very cold, straightforward. And I don't want to manipulate anybody. I just want them to do it because it's the right thing to do. And in the civilian world, I haven't been a terrible manager in the civilian world. Paramilitary stuff, yeah. Army, yeah. When it's two or three guys working on a team and they know me well and it works great, but if it got over 10 people, they're going to end up hating me because I'm not going to take their garbage. I can see it already in our group, and it's happening in every group. I don't know a group out there that's serious about this that doesn't have one or two idiots in it. And because we're Christian, we have big hearts, we give them several attempts, some say 7 times 70, to make it right. Well, I don't. That's one of my shortfalls, and that's a sin I have. I give people 3 tries. If they fail me in 3 tries, I put up a wall and I shut them out. And eventually they realize it and they go away. Unless, in a worst-case scenario, they make me go off on them, and then I have to tell them, look, you're a waste of time here. Go find somebody else to play with. You're not any good to the group. You're a burden. And that's not what we're about. This isn't communism where everybody to his need. No. This is about teamwork. This is about fighting together, rowing in the same direction, not pulling a boatload of dead weight around on a raft and you sleeping all day. No, that's not what we do here. That's maybe why it's so hard to recruit people for here, huh, Lou? Maybe I'm too mean. Maybe they come here and they get all excited and then they see that I'm actually going to make them get dirty, get their knuckles scuffed, and that they have to actually show up with some raw material or tools or desire. If you just show up with desire, that's enough for me. I can turn an idiot down. A loudmouth, I can turn him down. I can take somebody who's overzealous and make him usable. But I can't. It's really hard for me to turn somebody up who's lame. Somebody who's just like, okay. It's really hard for me. It's one of the biggest struggles I've ever had. God didn't give me that set of gifts to deal with people that are lame. I don't mean lame as in limping, but just lame attitude. Or cowards. I can't deal with cowards. We've had a lot of good people come through this group that are like, oh, I'm so scared. You know, Hutari got scooped up. We're going to be next. Well, then leave. Just go. And I had a guy tell me, he goes, within a month, you guys are going to be arrested just like Hutari was. I'm like, okay, if that's our fate, that's our fate. We'll learn from what they did, and we'll try and be one step ahead of the game. How long ago? That was April of last year. Here it is, almost, you know, looking at March 1st tomorrow. 11 months later, and we're still doing what we're doing. We've talked to sheriffs, we talked to deputies, we talked to whoever wants to come and poke their little nose up here and say, look, we're not doing anything wrong. That doesn't mean they won't make something up. You and I both know that. But folks, let's assume you've collected all your beans, bullets, band-aids, and Bibles. Now you got to start coming up with training scenarios for these people and training doctrines. I love it when we listen to Liberty Tree Radio and you just hear the activity that's going on there in the different areas. And I envy it because we don't have anywhere near the people. Here at Camp Kuia, if you know, we had 32 people show up for the last training. I think that's the biggest training that's ever been done here since the 90s, when everybody was a patriot back then and they didn't, you know, and they didn't get scared off. 32 people. I was a little overwhelmed, actually, to be honest with you. I'm used to training 14, 15, 17 people. If I ever have that many show up again, I'm going to have to deputize one of my own and say, look, you're going to have to assist me on this. I can't do this alone. Because it hurts the quality of the training. For what we were doing on Sunday, it was okay because it was scenario-oriented. But if it was hands-on skill stuff like it's going to be in the next training coming up on the 20th of March, I'm going to need, if we have 32 people show up, which I pray we do, I'll have to get some other folks. So we prayed in our church hard for a younger group of people, and we've got teenagers and young 20s coming in now. And their parents aren't, but these young men and a few young women, mostly young men, are wanting to be part of the church, wanting to be part of the training. I just saw them again today. And they're, you know, hey, is anything going on? Anything we can help with? Anything we do? No, we're fine. See you Sunday. God's going to give you what you can, you know, what you can handle, and that's it. You know, you just have to be able to rise to the situation and make darn sure that you're willing to put the sweat equity into it. Like I said, if you're interested in this, just email me, and I'll forward you all the links, all the training stuff, everything I've ever written. I'll just start sending it to you, either hard copy or email. And I'm not the end-all. I am by no means an expert trainer in any of the stuff that I'm teaching. I'm an end user who's become a trainer because it's just that's where I am. I was a trainer in a couple things, but I'm by no means an expert. By no means. I am not the best militia trainer there is. I'm not the best medical trainer there is, but I know some people that are better than me and we'll bring them in. I'm just the guy that's willing to do it, and that's all we're asking. That's all God asks, somebody to stand in the gap. Don't lone wolf it. Don't try to get through this lone wolf. It's going to hurt. It's going to be ugly. It's going to be nasty. We are called to fellowship with one another. We are ordered to fellowship with one another. It's not an option. And especially in war, we need each other. Not everybody gets in. We are very exclusive. Christ is was the most exclusive person. Nobody gets to the Father except by Him. Nobody gets into this group unless they're willing to do the work. Oh, man. Hello, I don't know if the phone line's working.
Oh, it's working.
What's up?
Hey, what's going on, DJ? I was wondering, is Debbie back yet, or is she still on her honeymoon?
Nope, she's down at her new house. She's not here.
Okay.
You're on the air live, by the way.
Oh, okay.
I'm doing my radio show right now, but yeah, you're going to have to call her cell phone.
Okay, all right. Thanks. Bye-bye.
I have no idea who that was, but Debbie doesn't live here anymore. She got herself a man. She's living down in the city. Well, not a city, but town. Our best wishes for that. Nothing better than two militia people finding each other at a training, is there? And then getting married at that church without a marriage license. Don't need a license from the stinking state. We don't need no stinking license. Pastor should do a whole show on that. So just remember, tomorrow night at this time slot here on Liberty Tree Radio and Stronghold Radio here from Kauai, we're going to have Steve Klein on. We're going to be talking more about cell warfare and what you need to do. Thursday, I'm pretty sure we'll have a live version of Practical Christianity. The pastor was able to give a sermon yesterday, but we'll have to pray that he's able to do that. If not, we'll play another sermon or I'll come on. This has been my first full show in a while. I'm feeling pretty good. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope I shared something that enriched your life, that made you think. That's it. That's it right there. I just want to make you think so that tomorrow you take a different action that you maybe wouldn't have. And if you like what we're doing here, please go to dutchjones.info, dutchjones.info, dutchjones.info. And you can go to the forum there. People have been making negative comments about the Shauna Ford trial in the guest book. We just delete them. But you can leave comments there. You can email us there. You can look at training manuals there. You can make a donation if so you're so moved to. We need to have consistently about $200 a month to stay on the air. $200 a month just to stay on the air, and that still means we have to sacrifice and pay some stuff here. So I want to thank you all for sacrificing your dinners if you're in that time zone and listening. And just stay tuned. We'll be back tomorrow. And remember, the sword is heavy, the battle is hard, but victory belongs to the Lord. Thank you for listening to Stronghold Radio and Liberty Tree Radio. We'll be back tomorrow.